welcome to this Wednesday, Constitution Day edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and we note that this morning, the University of North Dakota celebrated Constitution Day with a full slate of events honoring the signing of the U.S. Constitution on this day in 1787. And the centerpiece of that celebration was a naturalization ceremony this morning where 50 new citizens from 28 countries took the oath of allegiance. A naturalization ceremony is the final step in becoming a U.S. citizen. So we certainly welcome the newest citizens of our country who took that oath this morning in North Dakota. Coming up a bit later in today's Main Street, we'll remember the life and legacy of Robert Redford with former film reviewer Matt O'Lean, reflecting on the performances, directing, and character that made him one of Hollywood's true good guys. We'll also head to downtown Fargo for Prairie Plates at Moonrise Cafe, where Emily Driscoll shares her scratch-made cakes and hearty comfort food at a place that's grown into a community gathering place. Then on Prairie Beat, NDSU's Dr. Sean Brotherson explains how the constant stream of heavy news and social media can take a toll on our health, and he offers ways to cope. And we begin Main Street today being joined by Sarah Nagel, the Director of Business Development with the Bowman County Development Corporation. Since 2017, the BCDC has been hosting the Fusion Workforce Conference, drawing businesses and leaders from across North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana. This year's theme, Beyond Limits, challenges us all to think differently, build boldly, and lead with deeper intention. Sarah helps guide the vision behind Fusion and also works year-round to strengthen the business and workforce climate in Bowman County. Sarah, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Sarah, for listeners who may not be familiar, what is the Fusion Conference and how did it get started back in 2017?
Sure. So Fusion started long before I came to Bowman, and Fusion really came out of a need of recognizing that especially Southwest North Dakota and our region just didn't have a lot of professional development opportunities. We are kind of in a pretty small rural area, and we're pretty far away from some of the bigger conferences, especially that happen within the state. And when you run a small business in a small town, if you can't afford to be gone for multiple days most of the time. And so we just thought it was an opportunity for us to bring a professional development conference to our area and allow our small business owners especially to be able to have the opportunity to continue to grow in their professional development.
So this year's theme is Beyond Limits. What does that mean in the context of workforce development?
So Beyond Limits really came about from our main keynote speaker, who is Jared Kapp. He goes by Cappy. And that kind of got built around his keynote. A couple years ago, we kind of shifted our thoughts of we used to come up with a theme and then try to find speakers that fit that theme. And a couple years ago, we kind of flip-flopped that, where now we try to find a speaker that we feel like resonates with our demographic and our population. And then we kind of build a theme around that. So we really built Beyond Limits out of Cappy's keynote, which is building outside the lines. And he really speaks to thinking outside the box. A house is not just four walls and a roof. And so it's really thinking about outside of that box and going beyond what you think are your limits.
This starts tomorrow in Bowman. You have other speakers as well.
Yes, we have. So Cappy, Jared Kapp is our main keynote. We have Danny Adams coming in. He is our MC and second keynote. And then we have Liz Mergen from Minnesota, and she will be our business speaker.
Tell us then, what makes each of them unique? And then what can attendees expect to get from these presentations?
I mean, I think that we have a great variety of speakers today. And then, you know, we have male and female this year, which I think is great for our audience. Cappy is from Spearfish, and so he is a Dakotan. And so I think having somebody that's a little bit local, you know, he's only 2.5 hours away from us, is pretty cool. Danny Adams, our MC, is more on the national level. He speaks nationally and does podcasts and things like that. So he's a little bit more on the national level. And then Liz just has a really great agricultural story and how she came up with her new business idea and kind of adjusted after a tragedy in her family. And so I think we just have a really good breadth of different topics and people with different backgrounds this year.
What kind of industries and attendees typically come? Are we talking about small business owners, corporate leaders, students?
All of the above, actually. We have a lot of small business here in rural North Dakota, but we also have some pretty big agricultural businesses that bring some employees here. We have a lot of people that come from the financial and energy sectors as well. And we also do have students this year that are going to be joining us. So we kind of have all ranges of industries, and then as well as all levels of professionals. So some of them might be entry level all the way up to CEO positions.
How does then this contribute to workforce retention and leadership?
Yeah, it all goes back to professional development, right? So we want to make sure that our companies are able to keep and retain their employees. And part of that is allowing them to develop in their professional industries and in their roles. So we were just trying to provide an opportunity with this conference to bring speakers in that would help them do that and want to stay in the positions and want to grow with the companies that they're in.
We're enjoying our conversation today on Main Street with Sarah Nagel. She's the Director of Business Development with the Bowman County Development Corporation. She's helping host the Fusion Workforce Conference, which starts tomorrow in Bowman. Sarah, let's talk about your work beyond Fusion, if we could. As Director of Business Development, what are your main priorities for the BCDC?
I mean, we really have a lot of different things that we work on with the community. I mean, workforce is one of them. We have workforce incentive programs that help not only bring new workforce into the area, into our region, but also retain them. So that goes back to that professional development program. Housing is also a big thing that we work on. So you want to get people here, we want to bring the workforce into our region, but you also have to have a place for them to live. And then there's things that table off of that. So that also includes childcare. So we have to make sure that we have places in stable childcare for those new workforce to take their families to. So it's kind of a whole big picture that we try, that all centers around workforce, honestly.
So are those your biggest challenges, Sarah? Housing, childcare, and then specifically, how does the, I guess, community or the Bowman County Development Corporation then support those challenges?
So yes, those are our biggest challenges. We're actually pretty good on childcare. We have some really great childcare facilities in town that we have worked hard over the past couple of years with them. So we're in a good, really good place with that. I think the number of workforce, lack of workforce, and just the number of people we have and housing are two of our biggest things. We actually participated in a big housing initiative through North Dakota Department of Commerce last year. So we were able to take some dilapidated lots in town and remove the properties from those, clean those lots up, and get new houses on those lots. So that's one way that we're trying to get more workforce into town. I mentioned those incentive programs that we have, sign-on bonuses and relocation packages, again, trying to help those businesses bring in new employees.
So if you were to tell me, Sarah, the businesses you would love to attract to Bowman starting now with these incentives, what would you tell me? Who would you tell me you'd love to come to Bowman?
I mean, we have I would say retail. I mean, we could always use more businesses on Main Street. I think rural North Dakota especially is seeing some downturns on their Main Street. And so I think retail businesses, restaurants are things that we would love to have. With the Theodore Roosevelt Library opening at Medora next summer, we're going to see a lot more tourists coming through our area, especially in the summer. And we want to be able to support that and grow with that tourism as that grows in the next couple of years. So those would be some big things that I would love to see. We also have an industrial park on the west side of town that we would love to get some bigger industrial businesses to come in as well.
Do you have any success stories that the BCDC can share with our listeners?
I mean, we have lots of success stories. I mean, one of our most recent ones, I would say, is we've heard a lot of success from our workforce programs. I mentioned sign-on bonuses and relocation. We had a opening in our school for a math teacher, and the woman that applied had some options of where to go. And she said that the final decision making for her to come to Bowman was that we were offering a relocation package for her. So again, I think really noticing what we're seeing in the community, where the needs are, and trying to make that and trying to provide programs that help with that. And workforce is one of those. So if we can help employers try to entice their packages, try to get people to here to Bowman, that just helps the economy as a whole.
For people that come to Bowman, maybe for the first time, like the teacher you just told me about, what surprises them about the community?
I mean, I can tell you from my personal experience, I'm new to Bowman. I've only been here, it'll be 2 years in December, and I am consistently amazed at the quality of work-life or work-life balance we have here. I think we have a lot of great amenities for being a small rural town that a lot of other communities don't have. We have a new jump pillow. We have a jump park. We have a really great park and rec department. We have a great school and a really great community that just supports the family life and the work-life balance.
I guess I would ask you, Sarah, what is one thing that you hope the attendees walk away from after Fusion 2025?
That there's nothing out of their reach. I think all of our speakers will kind of touch on this tomorrow, but like, go after that dream, take that next step, take that chance, because we need more people to do that, especially in rural communities.
What about things like healthcare and other amenities that you know are important to the community? In your day-to-day work, Sarah, are there things that people say, you know, I would come to Bowman if it weren't for something, that is just in the back of your mind?
Yeah, we actually do have a hospital here in Bowman. So again, for the size that we are, that's a huge benefit. I would say one drawback or one holdback for people coming right now here is our lack of restaurants, which we're working on. We received a grant from the USDA Rural Development to purchase and renovate an old restaurant that's been empty since 2019. So we've been working on that project since then, and that we will open in 2026. So that would be the only thing I would think, oh, I wish there was more places to eat, especially on certain days and times. But that is something we're actively working on fixing.
Our guest has been Sarah Nagel. She's the Director of Business Development for the Bowman County Development Corporation. And she joined us today on Main Street to talk about this year's Fusion Conference. The theme is Beyond Limits. It's a one-day event in Bowman starting tomorrow that brings nationally recognized speakers and fresh energy to workforce leadership. We also chatted about how Bowman County is supporting local businesses and building stronger communities. Sarah, if people want to learn more about what you do, where can they go?
They can go to bowmannd.com.
Thanks for joining us today on Main Street, Sarah.
Thank you.
Someday when people look at me, they'll say, there goes Roy Hobbs, the best there ever was.
TriStar Pictures presents Robert Redford in The Natural, the story of a father.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and today we're remembering the life and work of Robert Redford, who died yesterday at the age of 89. For a generation, he was Hollywood's leading man, a star whose charisma, range, and good looks carried films like Butch Cassidy and The Sundance Kid, The Sting, All the President's Men, and many others. Later, he became a groundbreaking director and the visionary behind the Sundance Film Festival. Joining us is our former movie reviewer, Matt Olean, to look back at Redford's remarkable career and lasting influence. Matt, welcome back to Main Street.
Thanks, Craig. Good to be here.
Matt, so many people think of Robert Redford as the golden boy of Hollywood, the handsome leading man. Barbara Streisand said yesterday he was one of a kind. But what's the one thing about his career, Matt, that has surprised you the most as you've reflected, and something audiences might not immediately associate with his life of work?
Well, first off, what a kind of a shock. I had, you know, he died in his sleep, I guess. And my earliest memories of movies are going with movies to my dad in the early 70s. Robert Redford was a presence. We went to Jeremiah Johnson together. We went to The Sting. So he's kind of been there my whole life in terms of this superstar. And it's a great loss. I'm very sad about this. He definitely had an impact on my life, my movie-going life with those big films he made in the 70s. But I think the thing to remember is stardom didn't come right away for him. You know, in the early 60s, you could see him on The Twilight Zone and Perry Mason and things like this. He was kind of the second lead in a lot of movies in the 60s to Natalie Wood, like This Property is Condemned and Inside Daisy Clover. Barefoot in the Park, 67, with him and Jane Fonda, really was a big moment for him. He'd done the part on Broadway, but it was Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, 1969, where he became this superstar, paired with, of course, another superstar, Paul Newman. I would say the interesting thing about Redford is, yes, he is one of the best-looking film stars I've ever seen in my life for a male movie star. But he made serious movies, Craig. He wasn't like a frothy, you know, leading man making rom-coms. Nothing against that. He made serious movies. And he liked to make serious movies about serious topics. And that's the kind of films I generally like. So I gravitated toward him. Now, certainly his star charisma made money for those movies. His star charisma, you know, made money. But The Candidate is a serious movie, a political movie. The Sting and Butch Cassidy have a light touch, but The Way We Were, despite being a romance with him and Streisand in the film, is really a movie about communism and McCarthyism and things like that. Of course, he played Gatsby in The Great Gatsby, but All the President's Men is maybe the best film he ever did. His production company made that. Bob Woodward even chimed in yesterday to remember Robert Redford, of course, because he played Woodward in that movie. So he was this impossibly good-looking man who wanted to do more. He wanted to make serious movies, founded the Sundance Institute, the Sundance Film Festival, became a director. You know, he wins the Oscar for Ordinary People. I really like some of his other directing films, like A River Runs Through It, Quiz Show, The Company You Keep, which is a later film director film that he made later in his life, which is about kind of revolutionaries in the 70s, kind of on the run, you know, whether underground type situations or people. That was kind of an interesting later film, I thought. But he used his star power for good, I think, Craig, if I can say one thing about him. He didn't make silly movies. He made really serious movies. I love him in The Natural, the baseball movie he made with Glenn Close. And even in something like Indecent Proposal, where he's, you know, the millionaire who offers Woody Harrelson a lot of money, for that one night with Demi Moore, he's all movie star in that movie. He is all movie star in that movie, a frothy thing like that. But he championed independent movies. And so many people are remembering him for that as well, that he really was a champion with Sundance of independent films that came into their being in the 1990s especially. And so I think a lot of people owe him a big debt for putting that big face, that big star face, onto independent films by founding the Sundance Film Festival.
I think one of his great legacies, Matt, is that he used his success to lift others. And what a great legacy to leave.
Yes.
Matt, I want to ask you about one film. A friend of mine and I were visiting about Robert Redford, and he said, look, if you've not seen one of his recent films, take time to catch All Is Lost. And he said that it's a film where he's the sole character who utters 51 spoken words, but he managed such an emotionally complex performance.
Thank you for mentioning that movie. I think that's his best later performance, where he is alone in this boat and he shows his physical, you know, he was always a guy that was in good shape. You know, you watch him in these movies, you know, women just loved him in all the movies he did. But I think men liked him, too, because he was virile, he was quiet, he was confident. And in All Is Lost, it's an amazingly physical movie, Craig, if you've seen it. He's, you know, he's trying to fix this boat. He's crawling around this boat. And it shows what amazing shape he was in for 77 years old or whatever he was when he made that movie. And again, that's, again, not a typical star-making movie, is it? It's you know, a guy in a boat, but it's Robert Redford, so people went to see it. I would say as an actor, Craig, I think he was a little underrated. He only ever got one Oscar nomination as an actor, and that was in The Sting, which he's great in. But he's very understated on on screen. He's not big. I mean, he's not. He doesn't overact. He's very understated, but you believe every word he's saying. He's so good in The Way We Were as Hubble Gardner, this kind of conflicted character that Barbara Streisand sees as a better character than he is. He's a compromiser in that movie. He compromises everything, but he has these impossibly good looks. She's in love with him. She stares at him in class when they're in college in the movie. But he's very understated, and Streisand noted that in her tribute to him yesterday. He doesn't emote a lot on screen. It's very subtle. Look at his performance in All the President's Men. He's got a scene in that movie, Craig, where he's on the phone trying to confirm information about Watergate, and the scene goes on and on and on and on, and it's just Redford on that phone. But in that scene, you get a sense of journalism, what journalists do, what a reporter does. There's nothing like, you know, there's no special effects. There's no bombs going off. It's him on this phone, and you're captivated because Robert Redford is so good in that scene. And 3 Days of the Condor is a thriller he did in the 70s that's very good as well. Sneakers, a later film he did. Any film he was in that was, like, very serious still made money. He had a box office run, Craig, from Butch Cassidy through The Electric Horseman, that 10-year span from 69 to 79. I'm not sure there's another run like that in movie history. Every movie he made, even The Great Gatsby, which, you know, maybe didn't come off quite like it could have based on that famous book by Fitzgerald, still made money because he was in the movie. So very understated actor, I think a little underrated. You know, he didn't play Hamlet, anything like that. But I really like him on screen. He comes off as more than just good looking. He comes off as a serious, thoughtful leading man.
And that's been our conversation with Matt Olien, our former movie critic here at Prairie Public, remembering Robert Redford, an actor, director, and visionary who left an incredible mark on American film and culture, had many iconic roles on screen, and also his legacy is about influencing and lifting others through his Sundance Film Festival work. Matt, thanks so much for remembering one of Hollywood's good guys with us today on Main Street.
Thanks, Craig.
2 hamburgers, 2 cheeseburgers, and 4 Cokes.
Onion?
Yeah, in the Cokes.
Memories may be beautiful and you.
Still to come on Main Street, how about a taste of scratch-made comfort at Fargo's Moonrise Cafe? And maybe something not so comfortable, how to guard your well-being from a flood of heavy news headlines that have been coming our way. That's ahead on Main Street. Stay with us.
I like bagels.
Have some salad.
All I eat is pizza.
Eat some barbecue.
Applesauce and some nice red beets.
Welcome to Prairie Plate, served weekly here on Main Street. And here this week, we have a special guest with us at one of my favorite places in downtown Fargo. It's Emily Driscoll with Moonrise Cafe, and they offer a variety of goods, anything from coffee to pastries to breakfast burritos to sandwiches. There's just a lot going on, and there's also a cakes bakery side to it, which we'll talk a little bit about too. Emily, welcome to Prairie Plates.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here today. Tell us a little bit about what Moonrise Cafe is. I always say cafe because it's kind of a North Dakota thing. People say cafe, I say cafe. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so Moonrise Cafe opened about 2 years ago. In fall 2023, we have a variety of house-made. We make all of our stuff in-house, burritos, cakes, breakfast, lunch, pastries. Our most popular items seem to be Pop-Tarts and the breakfast burritos, so people seem to love those.
Talk a little bit about those Pop-Tarts. They're very popular.
Yeah, so the Pop-Tarts kind of started before I opened Moonrise, I was doing like pop-up markets and selling these things along with my cakes. The Pop-Tarts are completely made from scratch. I just make the pie dough, and then the jam filling is made from scratch as well. So you just assemble those, and then we bake them fresh every morning and top them with some icing.
And there are different varieties, right?
Yeah, we do. We offer two flavors every day, and they're always changing. So we've got like blueberry cardamom, strawberry guava, brown sugar, some of your like classics like brown sugar cinnamon, but we also switch it up and do some fun flavors.
Well, those breakfast burritos are also quite good. I get this bacon chipotle one, but I think there's also a vegetarian option.
Yep, so we've got the bacon chipotle burrito as well as the veggie burrito, which is going to be like onions, peppers, potatoes, eggs, and cilantro lime sauce.
All the good stuff. A lot of people here from Prairie Public like to go over to Moonrise, especially for coffees, and I think you offer some specialty coffees. I usually just get drip, and I like a lot of cream in it, no sugar, but I'm kind of one of those heavy on the dairy. But specialty coffees.
Yeah, so around this time of year, we've got a lot of good syrups, pumpkin spice, orange cardamom, and our brown butter maple bourbon syrup.
And how does one go about making these syrups? I'm guessing it's a simple syrup sort of thing with sugar and water, and then you put all the other stuff in. But I'm you probably have some special recipes for these.
No, making coffee syrup is not difficult. So anyone could do this at home. You just kind of are throwing sugar, water, and spices into a pot and letting them simmer for about 20 minutes.
So you kind of just steep it for a while.
Yeah, our most high-maintenance syrup is going to be the orange cardamom because we fresh squeeze all the orange juice to make that.
Well, people sure love pumpkin spice this time of year. Are you seeing a lot of people come in to get those drinks?
Yeah, the most popular syrups are definitely the pumpkin spice, and then our maple butter bourbon syrup is really good, too. It's got real butter in it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the lunches because I come in for soup, specifically chicken wild rice, and I think you have some Nephila, and then Mike Olson here was talking about carrot ginger. Those soups are also all homemade in back from you gals.
Yeah, so my business partner Alexa is kind of responsible for most of our soup recipes. So she's like known for that chicken wild rice and potato kielbasa, as well as the Nephila, which is definitely a crowd favorite in the Midwest.
It definitely is. There was a couple years ago, and yours was one of them, but I tried. You were just open, so I'll give you a little grace because now it's really good. But I tried 16 Nephila soups in the Fargo-Moorhead area, mm-hmm. and I ended up gaining like 5 or 6 pounds. And because it was in the middle of winter, and what's better than Nephila soup in the middle of winter? But yeah, 16 Nephila soups.
It's so comforting because it's just butter, flour, and I mean, cream. That's about it.
It's that hearty German-Russian soup that is so popular around here. Emily, tell us a little bit about some of the cakes you make. You kind of have a side company called Heart Cakes.
Yeah, so the whole business kind of started out from me making these custom cakes out of my house a few years ago. So I started doing that, and that's kind of where the Moonrise Cafe dream was born, with Alexa and I kind of questioning our careers during the pandemic lockdown, naturally, like a lot of people were. So it started out with the cakes, and then we got the storefront. So I kept the Heart Cakes name under the Moonrise Cafe title just because that's kind of what started the whole thing.
Is there kind of a philosophy or a mission behind Moonrise? I know there's a lot of posters up and certain things, community activism, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so Moonrise Cafe is kind of, I don't know, we started it as hopefully like a third space where people can meet new people in the community, gather for, you know, meetings for work or just general like organizations can like host classes there, which we don't have a lot of yet. But Parachigo, for example, downtown is like a nonprofit organization that hosts events. So they kind of have like their arts and crafts meetups at Moonrise Cafe. And then we also host trivia, and we're hoping to do more events in the future.
I've noticed some of that trivia, and I do like to play trivia. What night is that on?
We kind of took a break for the summer just because it seems like a lot of, for example, like college kids leave for the summer. So we kind of took a break just to just because we weren't really getting as many participants. But we're going to start that back up the last Thursday in September, I believe.
Emily, where can people find you if they want to go eat at Moonrise or get a coffee?
Moonrise Cafe is conveniently located in the very center of downtown Fargo at 111 Broadway North. And so, yeah, you can totally find us there. Our parking situation is sometimes iffy, but there's plenty of parking garages around.
Well, it's a good time to take a trip. It's almost soup season, and get yourself some soup or coffee. Emily Driscoll, it was great having you on Prairie Plates today. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by LiveWire, a provider of live event audio, video, lighting, staging, and streaming services for events, conferences, and meetings across the Prairie region and around the country. More information at livewirenow.com.
Hey, Prairie Beat fans, I'm Ann Olquist, Director of Radio. I hope you'll join us for the State of the Station, October 2nd, at the Sanctuary Event Center in Fargo. Our special guest is PBS CEO Paula Kerger. More information about tickets at prairiepublic.org. See you there.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Short of heading to a tropical island, how can we unplug from the stress of the news and comments about the news we see every day as we scroll on social media? On this week's Prairie Beat, we have some expert advice.
Hey, I'm Eric Detheridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. Thank you for joining us for another edition of Prairie Beat.
It's our weekly snapshot of Prairie region news, which we have found there's never any shortage to talk about. So what's on the beat this week, Danielle?
Honestly, a lot, and possibly even too much.
You know, you're not wrong about that. The last week or so, a lot of troubling national headlines have been reverberating all over the internet, at homes and offices, everywhere. It's certainly having an effect.
That effect is what I wanted to talk about this week, Eric.
My name is Sean Brotherson, and I am a professor and extension family science specialist with MDSU.
We've heard from Sean Brotherson before. Craig had him on Main Street, actually.
Yeah, so before we get into this week's topic, I do have one anecdotal story I'd like to share.
Okay, I'm listening.
So I was hired by Prairie Public all the way back in November of 2006, and they had me set up just off to the side of where Mike Olson used to broadcast his Into the Music show out of Grand Forks. Mm-hmm. And we were on the UND campus in an old building.
The old Valley Dairy building.
Doesn't even exist anymore. And I basically had a whole room to myself with all the stuff I needed to do my job in there. And I don't know why, but there was a little TV in there. And, you know, being the brand new cub reporter that I was at the time, I had all these ideas about my career and what I thought I needed to be doing. I thought, I really need to be immersed in news. I should know a lot of stuff that's going on, not just in North Dakota, but the country and the world. So I have context for what I report on in my day-to-day work.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. Of course, you're a reporter, so it would definitely make sense that you are immersed in the news.
Absolutely. So when I got into work every morning, I just turned that TV on, and it was tuned to a 24-hour cable news network. I had it on all day long.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so you might know where this is going. It took me about 6 months to figure out that having a constant stream of breaking news on all the time was not very smart. I was a nervous wreck. I looked up some of the things that were happening during that time just to kind of refresh my memory. So here's just a few things. The Virginia Tech school shooting, which killed 32 people, injured another 17. There was an F5 tornado in Kansas that wiped out pretty much an entire town. And there were a couple of international commercial plane crashes that killed everyone on board.
Yeah, I remember that, actually. That was a lot to take in. But here we go. We got a confession from a news reporter that there is sometimes something is too much news.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot to think about just sitting here talking with you. But yeah, I sat there in my workspace for several months working on local news stories while also digesting a lot of serious current events bite by bite, headline by headline, as they were developing on live TV. And so I did the only thing I knew to basically take care of myself in that moment, which is turn the TV off.
Gosh, gee, we sure do have that power, don't we? That was almost 20 years ago, all the things you're talking about, Danielle. But by then we were pretty used to news happening in real time, you know, what with cable news 24 hours and everything, we had access to it, but it was being reported in real time as it was happening, instead of just turning on the news in the evening and watching old Walter Cronkite, Peter Jennings, Tom Brokaw, and learning about what happened in just a half an hour, minus about 10 minutes with commercials.
Okay, Boomer.
And like you just mentioned, you know, since then we've had the development of social media, smartphones, practically everything we could ever want to learn about is at our fingertips anytime we might want to know about it.
I mean, it's good to stay informed and up to date, yes, definitely. But these days, it's also, I think we're all feeling this, extremely overwhelming.
Precisely. Sean Brotherson says, as humans, we are just not meant to handle an endless barrage of heavy information, videos, or images.
It really does significantly activate our emotions, our anxieties. The way our stress response system is constructed is that we can elevate those senses that we have and respond to kind of a crisis situation over the short term. But when it starts to consistently happen over and over at that high level and we don't come back to a baseline level of normal functioning, it can be really unhealthy for us.
Okay, so that's why I'm feeling sometimes a boiling, heaping mess of anxiety.
I mean, yeah, and me too, honestly. I told my friends and family for years after I shut off that TV in my workspace that they should do the same thing. Don't consume too much news at once. But recently, I found myself glued to my phone, doom scrolling, and I'm pretty much a nervous wreck all over again.
Yes, as the old English Beat song goes, I confess too. So in the short term, we know it's not good for us to be stressed out like that, but I can't imagine the long-term effects are any better.
No.
Long term, you'll have chronic wear and tear on what we call your stress response system. And so your brain will more easily become overactivated to smaller occurrences of stress.
Kind of reminds me of when, like, you had a long, stressful day and a bunch of terrible things happen, but then it's just something stupid, like a sleeve or a belt loop or something getting stuck on a door handle as you walk by, and that one thing just keeps feeling like the end of the world, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
And Brotherson also pointed out to me something that I know is true, but is also very important to remember. So when we are on the internet, our social media apps, all those things, the algorithms are programmed to show us the most shocking and rageful things that will give us those emotional responses. It's designed to keep us on those apps, maybe reading comments or commenting ourselves and boosting that algorithm. It's designed to trigger those responses over and over again.
So yeah, if dopamine was the chemical that was triggered in our brain the moment we went on Facebook or Instagram and found instantly a high school or even elementary school reunion of our long-lost classmates, if that was the emotion, I wonder what part of the brain gets stimulated, if you will, when we're made to feel angry because of all these algorithms.
Yeah, it's sort of this endless loop that really doesn't help anybody. But he did have some advice for those of us who might be feeling that pressure.
Self-care becomes critically more important during times of elevated stress, but it's also important just on a daily basis and in how we function and take care of ourselves. Our health is arguably our most important resource that we have as individuals, and especially it's the resource that we rely on during times of stress so that we can be resilient.
It really does go back to taking care of ourselves, putting ourselves first, our physical and mental well-being, which can be some of the hardest stuff in this busy modern world to make time for.
Yeah, and that's definitely true, and I think it will mean something different for everyone. Although I do think my old advice to friends and family about shutting off the news still stands, we still have to approach it differently. Today, I find myself wanting to check my phone a lot, so I'm just gonna have to start prioritizing keeping that thing away from me. Maybe keep it in a different room. I already have notifications turned off for most things. Some people like to delete apps that they've a hard time staying away from, and that's also good advice. It's definitely okay to stay informed, but it's also critically important to give ourselves a break here and there so we can really let our brains rest and recover, like Brotherson said earlier.
Yeah, take your phone, put it in a desk drawer somewhere that's not actually at your desk, because you have to get up to get it if you feel that urge. And so if you're like me and you're lazy, maybe you just won't get up. Mm-hmm. You know? So did he have any other advice than just staying off our phones?
He did. He said establishing good routines is healthy. You can start exercising, meditate, have regular conversations and connections with family and friends, get outside. And he said for families who are under stress too, since we know anxiety and stress can take a toll on families, make those good faith efforts to reduce exposure to those things that are triggering the stress. And then, in addition to the things we just mentioned there, keep those lines of communication open so you can lean on supportive family members and friends. He also told me it's never a bad idea to see your healthcare provider if you're not feeling well, because mental and emotional health can take a toll physically. Headaches, pain, fatigue, anxiety, all that can show up after stress. And he mentioned the importance of boundaries too. You know, you can set your own boundaries for what you can and cannot handle on a day-to-day basis, but maybe you need to have a tough conversation with somebody you're stressing out about. If you set the boundaries ahead of time, just say like, you know, we need to talk about this such and such a subject, but here is when and where we're going to do it. Let's keep it to this amount of time. Setting the expectation can alleviate some of that stress.
Danielle, self-care is what it's all about. You got to take care of your mental well-being as much as your physical body. It's very important. So thanks for that good information. Timely topic for sure with everything that everybody's talking about these days. So, and with that, maybe a change of subject will do us some good. What else has been going on in the news?
Well, I'll try to keep it lighthearted too, okay?
The demand has been very high.
So Dave wrote a story about the blackout license plates that just came out August 1st. They are very popular. DOT has issued 12,000 of them so far.
Today, about 56% of the vacuums are being sold online.
He also wrote a story about a longtime Bismarck business closing. J&R Vacuum and Sewing, the owner Jim Barnhart, isn't retiring. He's focusing on philanthropy and giving back to his community.
Some people thought it was pretty crazy to have restaurant reviews in Grand Forks. Some very sophisticated people at UND thought that was weird. But one day my boss, the publisher of the Herald, came out, Mike Maidenberg, and he said, "Marilyn, I don't care what they say. I like the Eat Beat."
And then, of course, many state and local media sources have been reporting on the death of very longtime Grand Forks Herald reporter, food critic, and columnist Marilyn Haggerty. She has been beloved here for decades, of course, but one restaurant review back in 2012 brought her national and possibly even worldwide notoriety. I just ate in an Olive Garden last week and was thinking about her review of that restaurant when it opened in Grand Forks. She was 99 years old.
Amazing life, amazing career. I had a craving for the Olive Garden a couple years ago. I completely blame it on Marilyn, but man, was she just an endearing figure for North Dakota, for Grand Forks especially. She hobnobbed with celebrities like Anthony Bourdain. We're going to have a tribute to her tomorrow that you can hear on Prairie Public. Tom Brousseau, one of Marilyn's great lifelong friends, will also pay tribute in a future Great American Folk Show to Marilyn Haggerty. What a life, what a legacy admired by so many. So thanks for all that, Danielle.
You bet. Be sure to tune in to Prairie Public for more news, or you can check out our online newsroom at news.prairiepublic.org.
All right, that'll do it for this week's episode of Prairie Beat. I'm Eric Etheridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We'll see you on the beat next week.
You can hear Prairie Beat every Wednesday on Main Street, and you can also subscribe to our regional news podcast from your favorite podcast provider.
The God's Child Project is hosting Stories of Hope with Robbie Middleton in Washburn on Sunday, September 14th, in Dickinson on Monday, the 15th, and in Mandan on Thursday, the 18th. Learn how you can help to sponsor children's education in Guatemala and support the efforts of the Casa Jackson Malnutrition Hospital. Hear powerful stories of hope and resilience from Robbie, who works directly with kids and families, delivering essential resources and care and encouragement. More information and registration can be found online at godschild.org.
This is Bird Note. Northern mockingbirds, the continent's most proficient copycats, can learn to mimic the sounds of just about any other bird within earshot. But they mimic to show off, not to deceive. Males with the greatest repertoire are the first to attract mates. That's the payoff. If a mockingbird imitates a cardinal song, it's unlikely any cardinals are fooled in the process. No harm, no foul, no deceit intended. But a tiny songbird in South America called the thick-billed euphonia does employ what scientists call deceitful mimicry, a very rare trait among birds. When frightened by a predator near its nest, a thick-billed euphonia imitates the alarm calls of other birds nesting nearby. This stirs them into action, and they rush in to harass the predator, maybe chasing it off while leaving their own nests in peril. The euphonia, meanwhile, sits tight, maybe shouting out a few more bogus alarms while others do the dirty work. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
This is Dakota Datebook for September 17th. The barren fall of 1934 had left many areas with no produce to exhibit, and as a result, no fall festivals. But the 1935 harvest was bountiful for all crops except wheat. North Dakota was getting its chin back up, prompting fall festival planning across the state on this date. More than just community gatherings, these festivals reflected a revived spirit and a grateful heart in 1935. Towns held sports games, carnivals, dances, and concerts. Citizens stocked exhibit halls. Prominent politicians gave speeches. Stores ran sales, and much of the fun was geared toward visiting farmers. In Oaks, crowds were enamored by an acrobatic street attraction, horse races, and band concerts. Special prizes were awarded for the best old-time photograph and relic collections. At the Red River Valley Harvest Festival in Grand Forks, attendees could view splendid exhibits in the Corn Palace or watch the human fly, D.D. Roland of Pittsburgh, climb the tallest buildings without hooks, ropes, or nets. Beulah, known as the cowboy capital of North Dakota, hosted its annual cowboy reunion and harvest festival. The rodeo featured ornery horses, stubborn cows, and bow-legged boys. Winners of the amateur musical program were even offered the chance to broadcast over KFYR radio. In Noonan, there was a barbecue. The man with the longest hair and whiskers won a free haircut and a shave, while the farmer with the largest family present received free sharpening of his plowshares. Minot celebrated with a million-dollar auction, though the money came in the form of vouchers for shopping at local businesses during festival week. Shoppers received 10 magic money vouchers for every dollar spent in local stores, including on past due accounts. In addition to the auction, contests included husband calling and donut dunking. In Wahpeton, business leaders planned a festival to support local farmers. They considered agricultural exhibits essential for improving livestock, wheat, and other grains. And in Larimore, the Red Owl store won the window display contest with a presentation of fall vegetables and a stuffed squirrel helping itself to an ear of corn. The local 4-H club took the prize for the best parade float, and Cora Bentley was crowned Harvest Fair Queen. Many more communities would hold festivals throughout October and November, celebrating, as one paper put it, what the Creator had given. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Cody Goring. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
We'd like to thank the North Dakota Council on the Arts for supporting arts programming here on Prairie Public.
And that wraps up today's edition of Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you spent time with us. Tomorrow on the show, it's Home on the Range. Founded in 1950 by Father Elwood Cassidy, it's a therapeutic working ranch serving children ages 12 to 17 who have experienced serious trauma, exploitation, or trafficking. Executive Director Laura Feldman shares how the ranch's unique setting near Beach, North Dakota, and its programs, including equine and canine therapy, help youth find stability and hope. She also discusses the success of the new Badlands Learning Center and plans for a $3.2 million expansion to add classrooms, a life skills center, and more therapy services, all made possible through vital community support. That's tomorrow on Main Street, and we hope you can join us again.